Good morning. The U.S. men's soccer team crashes out of the World Cup. The Athletic tells us how a phone call by President Trump overshadowed last night's game.
The fact that President Trump was involved is crossing a major red line. You never want politics influencing the sporting product on the field.
The looming deadline for more than a million migrants after a Supreme Court ruling, and a new allegation against Graham Plattner throws his main Senate campaign into doubt. It's Tuesday, July 7th. I'm Gideon Resnick in for Shamita Basu. This is Apple News Today. For the U.S., last night's match started to go wrong right at around 9 minutes in.
It's infield. The U.S. is hesitating. A bouncing ball is picked up in the box. And that's the opening goal for Belgium. It was De Ketelaere.
The Belgians' early lead spelled trouble for the men's knockout match. Hope returned after a stunning free kick from Malik Tillman leveled things, but it quickly turned against the Americans, and Belgium scored again and again and again.
Well, don't concede another. Lukaku on the loose ball scores. Romelu Lukaku. The exclamation point for Belgium.
It ended 4-1, a devastating blow to a team with hopes of reaching its first quarterfinal since 2002. The U.S. team had lit up the tournament in the group stages, generating huge enthusiasm around the country. But last night's result ultimately kept up a familiar pattern of defeat against higher-ranked opponents when it truly mattered. But of course, even before a ball had been kicked, this had already become the most talked-about match of the tournament. U.S. star striker Florin Balogun had been sent off in the previous game against Bosnia and Herzegovina, a decision that typically bans players from the next match. But FIFA stunned the world of soccer with its decision to put the suspension to the side and to let Balogun play. President Trump said yesterday that he had called FIFA President Gianni Infantino following the red card, though denied telling him what to do.
All I did, I asked for a review because I didn't think it was a foul. And, you know, again, I'm good at this stuff. I didn't think it was a foul. I thought it was two great athletes that crashed into each other and got entangled.
Infantino later said the FIFA governing committee that made the decision acted independently. As the news broke, a dividing line quickly emerged. Former players and managers from around the world expressed outrage.
So it's a bad decision that will hurt the World Cup.
I think it's an absolute disgrace in Infantino. He should be ashamed of this because the sportsmanship of this game is in question here.
While U.S. pundits like Alexi Lawless celebrated the return of a crucial player.
This is some surprising but very, very welcome news to the U.S. men's national team, obviously to Balogun here. But I will say this, it is now USA versus the world after this decision.
Many commentators concluded the red card was harsh, so for some, the outcome was ultimately just. And FIFA does have the power to pause suspensions as it sees fit, with what is now the most famous clause in its rulebook. Article 27. Now, sometimes it has used this to let players suspended during the qualifying games compete at the start of the tournament. But it's never used the power during a World Cup, despite the tournament's long history of controversial decisions. So that led many to ask why here and why now. FIFA's disciplinary committee chairperson released their own statement. They cited the specific circumstances surrounding the incident and evidence available without offering much more detail. Even with the U.S. out of the World Cup, the last 24 hours have left lingering questions for FIFA. Paul Tenorio is a senior writer with The Athletic.
This is something that obviously has provoked a negative reaction all around global soccer because of the concern that the president of a host nation could be influencing things that are happening on the field and what that means, not just for the U.S.-Belgium game, but for the entire competition.
He told us the moment put further scrutiny on Infantino's closeness to Trump.
We've seen this cozy relationship between Infantino and Trump cause changes to happen before with FIFA. They ended up hosting, for example, the World Cup draw in Washington, D.C. after it looked like it was going to be in Vegas, in part to be closer to Trump and allow him to play a role in the draw.
Before the game, the U.S. head coach Mauricio Pochettino defended his team and said they were, quote, not the bad guys. But everything off the field, Tenorio says, could ultimately overshadow the positive takeaways of this memorable run.
And I think that's really unfortunate because it's an important moment for men's soccer in America. This is what this tournament was supposed to do and supposed to be. And they had been one of the most fun stories of the tournament to this point, the crowds that were coming out and watching, the watch parties all over the country. And we lose a bit of that.
The U.S. now joins its World Cup co-hosts Mexico and Canada in exiting the tournament, with nearly two more weeks of matches still to come. President Trump arrives in Turkey today for this year's NATO summit. He will meet with European leaders increasingly skeptical of the strength of U.S. cooperation. Last year, Trump secured assurances from allies that defense spending would go up.
Now this year is really making sure that the other countries are living up to that pledge.
Sungmin Kim is a White House reporter for the Associated Press and spoke to us from Turkey.
There's not going to be some big announcement, big agreement, some big takeaway or deliverable, as we say in summit speak, but it's really going to be a progress report, a status update of how everyone is doing after that big agreement last year in the Netherlands.
Other countries pledged to boost spending to 5% of GDP by 2035. That's no small commitment. It's just over double the overall level for European states and Canada as of last year. Some countries like Germany and some Eastern European nations have managed to keep up with the pledge. But others are running into issues. The UK and France are struggling to come up with a credible plan to sell to their electorates. And Spain has gone further, refusing to meet a target its government says is unreasonable. The US contributes one of the largest shares to NATO's budget, about 15%. Kim told us that the Trump administration is pushing a new version of the alliance, dubbed NATO 3.0. It's one that would allow the U.S. to shift its priorities.
So NATO 3.0 is this new vision really engineered by the Trump administration that Europeans are becoming more and more responsible for their own security. And in theory, that allows the United States to kind of pivot elsewhere. Look at China, the Western Hemisphere, other parts of the globe where they feel that their attention needs to be.
One area Trump has already pivoted away from is Ukraine. The U.S. has dramatically cut back its financial support and devoted less time to diplomacy. But Ukraine still relies on U.S. hardware. Just before the summit, Russia launched waves of drones into Ukraine, killing 22 people. The attacks underscored Kyiv's need for U.S.-made Patriot interceptor missiles, an issue that's likely to come up during the summit. Kim says Ukraine's success in holding Russia back this past year might draw Trump's attention. On Sunday, the president held separate calls with both Russian President Vladimir Putin and Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky.
When Ukraine has shown advances in the battlefield and an ability to kind of hold their own against Russia, experts point out that they feel like that has gotten President Trump's attention. President Trump, you know, likes winners, and he likes to see that Ukraine can fend for itself with the tools that they have.
In the days leading up to the summit, Trump renewed his attacks on his European allies over defense spending. And there are still tensions over his threats towards Greenland and Europe's refusal to do more in the Iran war.
It still can be tense, and those relationships have gotten a lot worse over the last several months because of the war in Iran. President Trump has repeatedly called out NATO leaders since he launched the attacks on February 28th for not helping in the way that he wanted to in terms of operations through the Strait of Hormuz or other issues where he felt they weren't providing U.S. with the help that he had sought.
Belgium's leader will be there as well. And according to Secretary of State Marco Rubio, the issue of soccer could come up. Immigrants across the U.S. are trying to figure out their next steps after a Supreme Court ruling put their future legal status into doubt.
It's going to affect more than 1.3 million people from as many as 17 countries, potentially.
Maria Sacchetti covers immigration for The Washington Post. Recently, the court ruled that President Trump could cancel the temporary protected status for over 300,000 Haitian and Syrian migrants. In fact, the ruling grants the White House full control to decide who does and does not benefit from TPS.
Some countries have had TPS, as it's called, for many, many years, even decades, and they've been pushing for a path to legal residency, and the Trump administration is pushing in the opposite direction. He's saying it is time for them to go home.
TPS was designed to allow immigrants to legally live and work in the U.S. if their home country is deemed unsafe due to conditions like war, natural disaster, persecution, and more. Congress created TPS, but the Department of Homeland Security determines if a country is eligible. Under the Biden administration, the number of countries greatly expanded, But under Trump, eligibility has been dramatically cut back. There are four countries that still have TPS: Lebanon, El Salvador, Sudan, and Ukraine, and their status expires later this year. DHS Secretary Mark Wayne Mullen recently told CNN that the program was only intended to be temporary and that people could pursue other routes to stay.
These individuals have a couple of choices. They can try to apply for a permanent residence here. They can apply for a temporary visa if they choose to, or they can choose to go back. And if they want to go back, we'll help them with that.
People are scrambling to find other ways to stay legally. They can try to apply for a work visa or legalize through American relatives. But the Trump administration has made it much more difficult to stay, to apply to stay legally.
Many people with TPS now face the prospect of returning to countries that the U.S. government still considers dangerous. The State Department says U.S. citizens should not travel to Haiti, for example, due to the risk of crime, terrorism, and kidnapping. Sacchetti spoke with a 38-year-old nurse with TPS from Haiti who told her that she hasn't been back since she left when she was 7 due to safety concerns.
People have been allowed to live here for a long time. They've been married, they've been divorced, they built these long and complicated lives. And now they have to start thinking about potentially dismantling that and rebuilding in their home country.
And the court's ruling stands to put more pressure on industries that rely on immigrant labor. The U.S. workforce includes more than 700,000 people with TPS. Many work in healthcare, childcare, and senior care, industries that were already suffering from staffing shortages.
They have a hard time hiring people. That is something that is a concern as well. And so they're worried about losing potentially hundreds of employees in the nursing home facilities and places like that.
In Ohio, where over 10,000 Haitians live, Republican Governor Mike DeWine called the ruling a mistake, while New York's Democratic Governor Kathy Hochul has vowed to fight it. Employment status for Haitians and Syrians under TPS is set to expire this Friday. Here are a few other stories we're following today. A woman who previously dated Maine's Democratic Senate nominee Graham Plattner said that he had sexually assaulted her, according to reporting from Politico and a number of other outlets. Jenny Rassicot dated Plattner on and off for more than 2 years. She alleged he entered her home in 2021 uninvited and intoxicated and forced himself on her. Politico reviewed emails between Rassicot and her therapist and spoke with people she had previously confided in as part of its reporting. She described the alleged attack in detail in a CNN interview last night.
I remember it being an instant where I had recognized that he wasn't listening to me. It wasn't just that he wasn't hearing me or whatnot. And then I recognized his level of intoxication. And I knew in that moment I wasn't safe. I don't think I was safe to physically fight back.
Plattner denied the allegations, but recorded a video statement in which he said that the campaign was deciding what to do next.
Regardless of the inaccuracy of the reporting, but mindful of the political reality it will inflict, we are taking the time to reflect on the best path forward for the state that I love, the people that I love, the movement I belong to, and the goal of defeating Susan Collins.
The statement followed the postponement of several campaign events. Plattner has been beset by controversy in a state that Democrats hope to flip in order to gain control of the Senate. And a number of his endorsers said they would no longer support him after the story broke. The state Democratic Party would have until July 27th to replace Plattner if he chose to exit the race. Huge crowds of Iranians lined the streets of Tehran on Sunday for the funeral procession of the country's late supreme leader, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei. As the coffin traveled through the city, pro-regime mourners chanted, "Death to America, death to Israel." Three of Khamenei's sons prayed beside his coffin there on Sunday, but Mojtaba, the son who succeeded him as supreme leader, was a notable absence. He still hasn't been seen in public since he was reportedly wounded in an Israeli strike. And finally, just why would Americans travel across the world to run away from bulls down a crowded street? The San Fermín Festival of Bull Runs has begun in the Spanish city of Pamplona, and the Associated Press reports U.S. tourists are the biggest group of foreign bull runners. It might all come down to Ernest Hemingway. His novel, The Sun Also Rises, is set in Pamplona. It marks its 100th anniversary this year. And at least one American told the AP the book's setting has inspired him back, despite being gored 3 times. Now, some in the city, including animal rights activists, are critical of Hemingway's influence, while others bemoan the level of tourism and, in some cases, heavy drinking that comes with the festivities. Still, a century on, the city pays tribute to Hemingway's impact with busts of the author and the preservation of a hotel he once frequented, with a room overlooking the Bull Run route. You can find all these stories and more in the Apple News app. And if you're already listening to the News app right now, we've got a narrated article coming up next. Popular Mechanics profiles Avi Loeb, the polarizing Harvard astrophysicist that Trump tapped to lead a group studying threats posed by UFOs. If you're listening to the podcast app, you can follow Apple News Plus Narrated to find that story. And I'll be back with the news tomorrow.